It's The Current's Music News, the daily podcast where we tell you what you need to know about what's going on in the music world. Today is Tuesday, August 28th. I'm Jay Gabler, and I have to apologize because yesterday I misstated the name of the debut album by the metal band that dresses as Ned Flanders. I said it was Oakley Dokley. The album name is actually Howdly Doodly. I hope that's at least an understandable error, Jade.
How dare you, sir? How dare you? Yeah, this is Jade. Slowly forgiving Jay for that error. And coming up later, a story of yet another album thought lost, then found in a very unlikely location.
And we'll also talk with music journalist Jessica Hopper about an important story she just published in Vanity Fair on women at Rolling Stone in the 70s. But first, a few of today's music news headlines. Public viewing is now open for fans to pay their respects to the late Aretha Franklin. The Queen of Soul is lying in state in a gold casket at Detroit's Charles H. Wright Museum of African American History. Public viewing will be available there through Wednesday, and then comes the big funeral on Friday with a star-studded cast of musical performers and people paying tribute to the inimitable Aretha Franklin. And it's going to be live-streamed if you can't be there, if you don't have one of those exclusive invites, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, Detroit time. It'll be live-streamed on the internet and will be broadcast on some TV stations as well. Chicago-area rock band The Orwells have canceled a scheduled November 23rd show after a Reddit thread surfaced that contained allegations of sexual misconduct, abuse, other general misconduct against three members of the band. So the band have canceled that show, but they say in a statement, quote, "While callow altercations and vulgar language we've used in the past must be recognized and owned up to, the accusations of sexual assault are completely unfounded."
This is another one of those situations where as soon as word came out, the band immediately made a statement. It's been interesting to see how all of this has developed in the past year and a half of how, fans are coming forward and bands are reacting.
Lauryn Hill has responded to allegations of musical theft. A musician named Robert Glasper in a recent interview said that Hill, quote, stole his friend's music during the sessions for her 1998 landmark, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. And she has responded at length in a big, long Medium post where she says that basically her style of collaboration, she would do it differently now. She was a little bit more inclusive is the word she used than she might have now been. But she does say fundamentally, these are my songs. There's a link to that statement at thecurrent.org. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, of course, celebrating its 20th anniversary, the landmark album including hits like Doo-Wop, That Thing.
Know about you, Jay, but I have a habit of putting things in very specific spots so that I don't lose them, and then I'll immediately forget what the heck I did with them. And I'm pretty sure Noel Gallagher is feeling that annoyance today because he just found a copy of a lost solo album in his sock drawer. And what album is it? So let's go back to 2009. This is just a brief period after Noel quit Oasis, and he decided he wanted to work on what would be his debut solo record. He brought in this really experimental production duo called Amorphous Androgynous, and he decided that the, quote, space rock album didn't really showcase what he wanted. So he kind of shelved it. In fact, he hated the album so much that he destroyed every record of it, he thought. In fact, he never even let anybody else listen to it. Like, destroyed every trace of it, but not quite, apparently, because now he has this one copy of it that was in his sock drawer. And he said, well, now that his new album, which is kind of spacey and a little out there, in fact, it has this song, Holy Mountain, which notably features a woman playing as her instrument a pair of scissors. With that in mind, he said, yeah, that album's gained attention. It even got this Mercury nomination. Maybe it's time to look back on this old experimental album and maybe let other people finally listen to it.
There's an important new article out in Vanity Fair, an oral history of the women who worked at Rolling Stone magazine in the 1970s.
Yeah, and this was a real boys' club, so it's very interesting to hear all of these women's perspectives.
Music journalist Jessica Hopper was inspired by a recent biography of Jan Wenner that mentioned these women at Rolling Stone in the 70s, and she actually went back and talked to several of them for this oral history. I actually had a chance to talk to Jessica Hopper earlier today and asked her what sort of things she learned talking with these pioneering women from Rolling Stone.
One of the things that was really exciting to hear the story of was really the women's friendship and their camaraderie and their sort of growing feminist consciousness together as a group, as Marianne Partridge, who was 28-year-old feminist, who came in and organized this first copy desk at Rolling Stone. She really lifted each of these women up, and they really kind of became very close friends and really like a cabal, like a real team together. And all of these women had master's degrees from top-tier schools, and they're all working as secretaries, and they were doing different, like, kind of menial tasks. And, you know, Marianne Partridge comes along and sort of pulls all of them up. Sarah Lazen told me a story about how, as she was a young editorial assistant at Rolling Stone before the formation of the copy desk, that one of the things she did was like a lot of transcription, and that she had been sent this big batch of tapes that would become Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, and that she transcribed it, and that all these crazy things she's hearing are happening on the tape. And she asked her editor, Jan Wenner, and someone tells her, you know, just type what you hear. And then that becomes a transcript. And so, you know, this incredible cultural document, you know, this landmark, Fear and Loathing, what we're actually reading is this woman, Sarah Lazen's understanding of what's happening. As someone who cares deeply about journalism, music journalism, it sort of galled me that I didn't know these women's stories.
And hopefully things have changed to some extent, but what really resonated with you as something that seems to still be happening today?
Oh, I mean, all of it.
Yeah.
You know, every newsroom, I think, has scrappy young women trying to make their way up through the ranks. And I think a lot of what was happening here, you know, one woman sort of gets like a modicum of power and kind of yanks up the other women with her. I mean, that happened to me. That's something I try to do, too. And so I know that a lot of these stories of women really banding together to help foster each other's careers, I mean, that's something that I still see every day. And I'm grateful to have been part of and also witness it.
So today's viral find is truly amazing. It is not overrated. So this is a student at the University of Minnesota has been secretly tweeting the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody for months.
For 4 months, right? Yeah, this is ridiculous. When you actually look back and see all of her tweets, the amount of preparation, Jay, that goes into something like this.
This is a student named Maddie Hart, and she just tweeted a couple of days ago in all caps, "Is it just me, or did I just pull off the greatest Twitter scheme of all time?"
I don't know if all time, but it's pretty darn good.
It is pretty darn good, because she even thought to tweet the lyrics in reverse order. So starting in May, she would take one word from the song's lyrics per tweet and start the tweet with that word, and did it in reverse order so that when she got to the end, you could read her tweets in backwards order and you would be reading the lyrics to the song if you just read the first words of all her tweets in order. And what makes this all the more impressive, A, she pulled it off without anyone noticing, even when she was dropping words like Magnifico, Figaro, Galileo, Bismillah, multiple times, because you have to if you're going to represent the lyrics. People still didn't notice. And these are good tweets. These are good, engaging tweets that are actually about her life. Like, for example, "Landslide, the Dixie Chicks cover is my mood right now." Or "Your MCM, Man Crush Mondays, back to school shopping list is a Patagonia visor, ramen noodles, and a 24-pack of Natty Light." Or "Poor college student Maddie's budget." So they're good tweets about her life, but they also just happen to contain the complete lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody. Well done, Maddie Hart.
Bismillah.
And that's today's music news. You can read all these stories, see links to some of Maddie's incredible tweets over at thecurrent.org. I'm Jay Gabler.
And I'm Jade.
Our producer is Anna Reed. We'll be back tomorrow with more music news headlines.